Hello and welcome to the inaugural episode of the Chief Executive Optimist podcast, delivering resilience recipes for leaders and high performers and helping you to preserve your sanity and humanity in this time of relentless change. I'm Gareth Hawkins, Principal Consultant and Coach at Enterprise Insights in London. I'm joined by my former colleague and longtime friend, Kieran O'Neill, Mindset Coach and founder of Total Mental Performance. So every episode, we'll be discussing topics from a forthcoming book, The Chief Executive Optimist, which relate to the leadership lifecycle from inception through to exit in the context of globalized, values-driven business world post-pandemic, where more importance is placed on individual and corporate integrity, sustainability, respect, and impact. And chief among this challenge for leaders is the importance of mindset and mindfulness. And Kieran, you coach every day your clients on how to be more present, more focused, more unencumbered as they go about their daily mission. Tell us a bit more about that.
Yeah, sure. So what we do is really simple. We work with high performers. So think CEOs, entrepreneurs, investors, business owners, basically people that are in quite competitive and high pressure environments. And we help them manage their mindsets to essentially minimize negative emotion, have mental resilience playbooks, and ultimately let go of insecurities, fears, doubts, the fear of not being good enough, ultimately to lead to peak performance. So that's our bread and butter. That's what we do day to day online via Zoom. I guess talking about momentum and talking about clarity and being present, what are you journaling at the moment, Gareth?
Yeah, well, at the moment I'm doing my normal 14 browser tabs open, as I tend to be an ENTP. I've got a foot in both camps. I'm reading a great new book at the moment that Amazon delivered to my Kindle yesterday, which is The Reset: Ideas to Change How We Work and Live by Elizabeth Uvibinini. She's a Financial Times columnist, and this is her second book, her solo work. It's sort of a commentary on the work-life balance, but it suggests that post-COVID, we have a unique opportunity to rethink our role in the work culture and the companies, communities that we're all part of. It goes beyond being a sort of work-life balance book and questions how we can fundamentally change the way that we function as a progressive globalized community and create better and more balanced, inclusive societies that value psychological and creative freedoms. It has, in the first 2 hours that I've thrown at it, blown my mind, frankly, because it's a bit of a kind of clarion call for change. And I guess we have a limited window in which we can make that sort of change. So highly recommended, The Reset by Elizabeth Uvibinini. And then the other foot is in the crypto camp at the moment. I've caught the crypto bug, started buying into various altcoins. Bitcoin always freaked me out because of the whole Satoshi Nakamoto, Kaiser Soze sort of figure. And I guess all the association with the dark web. Plus I missed the boat. So let's be honest, I should have bought it when it was $2,000 a coin rather than $50,000 a coin as it is today. But I'm into Ethereum at the moment. I follow a YouTuber called the Coin Bureau, a guy called Crypto Guy, a British fella. He's really, really insightful in regards to, you know, what new coins are coming down the pipes. And Ethereum has been established for quite a while, seems to be the protocol that is being adopted by most of the kind of noteworthy global drivers of commerce, not least most recently Visa and MasterCard, who have decided to use it as the technology to settle their digital transactions across. So Ethereum has already grown 15% for me in the week. I'm sure it'll drop by 20 next week, but for now it's a fun ride to be on, and it looks like it's got a bright future ahead. So yeah, that's me. What's on your journal at the moment then, Kieran?
Yeah, so I have quite a complex journaling routine. I don't just get a page and start writing, but I take, I think last time I checked, was 29 different data points. So I'm measuring things like sleep from my Aura Ring, sleep quality, sleep quantity, my recovery, training, things like that. I'm also tracking things such as mood, energy, productivity, mental focus, every single win for three wins of the day, three things I'm grateful for. Then I have a sort of free form, just brain dumping anything that's on my mind. And then on top of that, I'm also looking at things like steps, weight, like you name it. I'm tracking all of these different data points to kind of see what's going on. What have I recently added? One thing I recently added to my journal was what was something lucky that happened today? Because we don't often think about luck we kind of think, oh, well, it's out of our control, or we don't necessarily think about how fortunate we are and what's going on. So what lucky thing happened today? That's been a new addition.
I really like that. I have terrible discipline when it comes to journaling. If I try to write something that's going to take, 2,000 words, I probably don't get it started. So I had to distill mine down into the bagels: behavior, attitude, gratitude, evaluation, lessons learned, and successes. I basically give a few bullet points around those. You're right, it is important to celebrate luck and things you can be grateful for. And then I add to the bottom of that bagels model just some promises that I've made to myself and promises I've made to others. And that seems to be working. I'm kind of every other day at the moment trying to get up to daily. But it's a good discipline to have. So thanks for switching me on to journaling all those months ago.
Yeah, thanks.
And Jordan Peterson, is it?
Yeah, so that's quite interesting in terms of his writing exercises. So he's got something called the self-authoring program, where you write about the past, present, and future. So writing about the key moments in your life from when you were younger and how it shaped you into who you are today. Then you have present, so it's looking at strengths and weaknesses. And you'd be so surprised as to how many leaders just aren't aware of their weaknesses. There are so many leaders that they think, yeah, good at everything, everything's fine, I've got all of this. And then when you speak to their team, actually they're not. Maybe they think they're amazing in certain areas, but they kind of lack that self-awareness, or nobody's challenged them on their weaknesses. So that part of the Jordan Peterson self-authoring program is quite interesting, because you have to it asks you quite deep cutting questions. You go, maybe I'm not a genius at everything, or maybe there are things that I need to work on. And then the future, which is basically putting your stake in the ground as to where it is that you want to go, the psychological reasons as to why, and what are the barriers, and what are the milestones, and why is that goal meaningful? Are you doing it for yourself? Are you doing it for someone else?
Arrogance and ignorance around acknowledging weaknesses is a really old school leadership flaw, unfortunately. I mean, in today's world where authenticity reigns, you're kind of required to be humble and vulnerable as a leader and acknowledge your weaknesses and work to fix them. The days of the sort of alpha male leadership where you were beyond reproach, you were totally infallible, I think are well behind us. But it surprises me that there are still folks out there that maybe aren't so unaware, but maybe refuse to acknowledge their flaws. So you mentioned the Aura Ring a little earlier ago. I find that really interesting. Tell me a bit more about how that's working for you, Kieran.
Yeah, sure. So I'm wearing it right now. So the Aura Ring is actually really cool. So I was working with a sleep coach called Angus, really, really, really good guy. And he tipped me onto it. And essentially what it's tracking is heart rate variability, amount of sleep, amount of steps, amount of energy. It's tracking so many different data points. And it just simplifies it. So when you wake up in the mornings, you can go, did I get enough sleep today? Okay, no, we got 6 hours. So you can kind of prepare the rest of your day just knowing that I might not be 100% today. So then when you're not feeling 100%, instead of beating yourself up or getting frustrated or getting annoyed, you kind of have that permission to not feel okay, because you haven't rested or you haven't recovered. So that, for me, has been an awesome tool, just recognizing, okay, am I sleeping enough? Am I sleeping well? What are the patterns? But it's not perfect. There are things in it sometimes, like when I had COVID, it said my recovery was at 93 and I should go out and do a huge workout. No, not necessarily, doesn't work like that, because it is only tracking very specific points. But as a general basic rule of thumb to track sleep, I've found it very, very useful. And obviously sleep is the foundation of everything, of recovery, of performance, of mental health, physical health. Once you start to understand how important that tool is, because it's easy to be hustlepreneur, CEO, working hours and hours and hours and hours and hours, I don't need to sleep, I'll rest when I'm dead. Easy to do that, but actually if you look at the ability to perform well and lead, if you're not rested and recovered, actually you're just making in-flight decisions and often acting on emotion versus being able to be really controlled and really settled.
Yeah, you mentioned there as an interesting segue, although you did it in passing, that you contracted COVID a few weeks ago. How was that experience for you?
It was a positive experience. So I was feeling a little bit sore, a little bit tired, but I've been training in the gym, so I thought, probably training a little bit too hard, not eating enough. Then I got a bit tired. Then I really got tired. Then I picked up a cold. And I was like, okay, I'll see where this is going. So when I had a test, and yeah, I wasn't feeling 100% on the day I got the test. Next day it came in. So then I was locked in for a couple of, I think, 2 weeks. And to be honest, it was one of the best things that could have happened, because I was operating at such a speed. I'd forgotten a lot of my morning routines and evening routines. I'd forgotten a lot of the fundamentals and the basics as to how I'm structuring my week. Because leading up until that point, life was moving very, very, very fast. We're a scaling business. So we're growing quick. And that means you have to make a lot of in-flight decisions, and you have to go and go and go and go and go. Whereas when you get something like COVID, and they're like, right, you can't leave your apartment. That's it. You're in. It really forces you to slow down. And I had to rebuild everything from scratch, because all of my sleeping times went out the window. All of my habits, my routines, my training, everything really, really took a knock. So for me, I think it was an opportunity for me to go, right, it's a good opportunity to slow down. It's a good opportunity for me to work on other things I wouldn't normally work on. But then as I started to get better, it was then a case of rebuilding my routines day by day. So my morning routine, for example, to rebuild that, I set one task, which was, I'm going to have breakfast. That's all you need to do. We'll wake up and have breakfast. Because everybody tries to set up these intricate routines where I'm going to wake up and I'm going to have breakfast, then I'm going to meditate, then I'm going to go for a walk, then I'm going to have a coffee, then I'm going to journal, then and it's just never going to work. So to make habits stick, you need to almost build a habit upon another habit. So from there, I had breakfast. I went, right, after 3 days, I went, okay, you know what? I've got breakfast nailed. As a minimum, that's what I needed to achieve. Then I went, right, so I'm going to use the Elevate app. So I love the Elevate app. I've been using it all year. And what the Elevate app does is it tests your cognition, things like memory, maths, English, speaking, writing. And it's just a really good way to get your brain moving in the morning. And then on top of that, I was starting to feel physically a little bit better. So I started to add a set of press-ups. And just slowly but surely, I've been adding and adding and adding and adding and adding. And now my morning routine has built up to the point, I've been doing it consistently, where I wake up, I do some press-ups, then I have breakfast. Then I play the Elevate app. Then I read 5 pages of a book. So the book I'm reading at the moment is The Power of Full Engagement. It's all about managing energy, not time. It's by Jim Lower and Tony Schwartz. So then I read 5 pages of that. Then I have a little journal, and then I take all of my supplements. So I haven't just gone, right, I'm going to redo my morning routine, but I've slowly made a minimum that now I don't even think about it. I'm up, I do my breakfast. I have it written down. I have my instruction manual. If I get lost along the way, I go back to my instruction manual.
It's very disciplined that you're in that well in touch with your body and your mind, that you know when you're, you know, suboptimal, and you can chart your recovery that way.
We can start with little things. Everybody says they haven't got time to do exercise. Okay. Have you got 4 minutes to do press-ups in the morning? Probably. I don't care if they're really baby press-ups and you've got to do them off your knees. It doesn't matter. We just have these little inflection points. Or if you're journaling every day, spend 5 minutes just tracking, okay, how engaged am I? What's my energy? What are 3 things I'm grateful for? And then get out. We can do that, but we assume that there's only a certain breed of human that can do that or will do that. But really, it's about just starting so small and so tiny. It's almost impossible to fail. So building on that, you can then add things as you go. So with my journaling, I've got like however many data points, but I've been doing this stuff for like 4 years.
Yep, 1,000-mile journey starts at a single step, sort of to plagiarize Jim Collins. But yeah, I guess minimum viable product for most people to start with, and then build on that as they get more comfortable. So we've deliberately titled this episode 2020 Hindsight, because I guess this is us kind of putting a pin in COVID in our respective countries at the moment, and trying to move on with our respective recovery. But you made the bold step between lockdowns in the UK, kind of, was it autumn last year, to up sticks and move to the UAE. Tell us a bit about the decision-making criteria there, Kieran.
Yeah, it was pretty simple. We think back to Q1 2020, I had a breakup. I'd left a 6-year sales career. I'd been diagnosed with 99th percentile ADHD. I'd moved out of the flat that I was sharing with my ex into a shared accommodation, which with strangers, which was different. All of that, by the way, a pandemic then hit. Forgot about that. So for me, it was like this everything you could imagine from a Maslow's perspective has almost moved. Okay, you're not going to live here, so you've got to find some shelter. And the way that you thought about yourself has completely changed with the diagnosis. And, you know, that loving and belonging, that's also been a big change. So kind of had all of these shifting parts. And I went, you know what? Don't need this anymore. This isn't making sense. So I kind of looked inwards before looking outwards and going, right, okay, well, what is it that you want to do? I started to realize that I have always loved mindset. When I first came across it 12 to 15 years ago as a teenager in boxing, and just learning about how understanding mindset, understanding emotional management changes the game. And the journey that I'd been through from a understanding self, understanding emotions, setting up a mental resilience playbook, kind of made me think, well, we don't really talk about this stuff as high performers. We kind of just get on with it. We kind of keep ourselves to ourselves. We don't like to show weakness. We don't like to show vulnerability. So I thought, well, if I can help and I can share my story, then maybe that might help some other high performers in that space. And so that's where I retrained as a cognitive hypnotherapist, mental performance coach, and NLP practitioner. And I was doing probably 20 sessions a week, some at one point for free. And all of my clients started seeing so much results, they all started paying me. And I got invited to speak in Dubai at an event for online fitness entrepreneurs. So all of these people are doing somewhere between 5 and 15K monthly revenue. And then off the back of that, I ended up picking up 6 or 7 new clients, and they all kept asking me to stay in Dubai. So I extended for a week and I extended for another week. Then the UK lockdown in December, it's now going into May and I'm still here. So that's been my COVID journey. Very, very grateful for it.
Amazing. I mean, you've always had wanderlust and been a keen traveler. I know you've got aspirations to see as much of the world as you can. But I guess the sort of enforced lockdowns and the restrictions on international travel have maybe given you focus to really scale up your business. And certainly the success you're now having is testament to the focus that you've put into it.
Yeah. It's just changed everything, because you've been forced to behave in ways that you wouldn't normally. If we look at consumer behavior, that's all changing. The way that we're doing business is changing. Do we really need to go back to an office? Probably not. None of my team are working in offices.
I wouldn't want to be holding a high portfolio of commercial property right now, particularly offices. I wish I'd had shares in Zoom. But COVID's been, obviously present in our lives for, getting on for 2 years now. And you're right, there's so many more consequences that are going to come from it in regards to workplace issues. I think people's confidence issues. I mean, there's so many folks that I'm speaking to over Zoom and the phone that are, a bit broken by COVID, really. It's made us all agoraphobic. And are you seeing the same sort of trend in the UAE as we're seeing in the UK?
Not really, because UAE, so when the first lockdown came in, no one disobeyed, because they're very strict on the law here. So everybody was locked in and that was it. And then after that, they then assessed the risk and they haven't locked down since. And everybody's followed the rules. Everybody has masks. You know, the bars are open, the restaurants are open. They've been like that since I got here in November. And I mean, from there, it's pretty close to normal. All the gyms are open. So we've almost been living in this bubble over here. But you got to remember, in Dubai, I think there's 3.3 million people. There's a lot of space here. Whereas there's, I think, 66 million people in Britain in a much smaller space. So there are certain privileges that are here based to population density and the way in which the culture is, and people will really listen to the rules and they kind of stick with it, So here, there isn't so much of that fear as much. I've got a few clients that have come in with off the back of COVID, coming in with like phobias of getting ill, of becoming sick. So there is that.
I think internally to the workforce issue as well, people are starting to question themselves more. The lack of meeting room social engagement that they're getting and the sort of browbeating that they're getting from, Zoom after Zoom, Teams after Teams after Teams, it's sort of putting a distance between them and their colleagues that's I wonder if there's a sort of a hidden medium-term impact on workforces where, you know, things like trust gets eroded or, you know, people's effectiveness. I've certainly seen there are businesses that I work with that, you know, they're struggling to complete projects at the same speed as they used to because there is an inherent kind of disconnect now, even though everybody's in longer Zooms and, you know, have got longer working days, they're struggling with sort of a trust deficit. Are you getting much in the way of clients coming your way where they're concerned about their self-confidence and how that effective that's making them as leaders? Or
yeah, so I did deliver a workshop at UBS last week, which was quite interesting. So they're all going back into the office now in the team that I was working with. And there is a little bit of people are a bit uneasy. Some people want to go back in, other people don't. People haven't been in meeting rooms with each other. So there has been a bit of uneasiness about going back to work. Obviously, there's lots of different views in terms of even just the politics of COVID. And some people don't care. Other people really care. Whereas everybody's going back into the office, I have seen a little bit of an uneasiness. And it's nice to see that some of our clients are thinking about their teams and they're thinking about how can we help them and deal with that. In terms of most of the clients that we've worked with on the confidence thing, by the time all of this reintegration is going on, they'd already done the insecurity work or the vulnerabilities, the fears, the self-limiting beliefs. So because they'd already done that foundational work on an identity and subconscious level, this was just another change for them that they'd already planned for and they already had playbooks to deal with that. Some of the more junior executives, they almost a little bit excited because they're looking at things like, well, yeah, why do we have to work in an office? Maybe this could be the shift for the rest of our lives where we can live and work wherever we want. Imagine that. Imagine having to avoid the tube, getting on the Northern Line every single day at 8 a.m. No bueno.
No, there's definitely a sort of a environmental sustainability argument and a work-life balance, if we get this right, opportunity, as per the book I referenced earlier, The Reset. But I'm more concerned about what that does for the dynamics of groups and how people are interacting in teams. Is there a mental resilience playbook approach to overcoming that?
I think accepting that things have changed. Actually, the younger generation are demanding to be able to work remotely. You look at TikTok, a lot of their employees are around the world. They don't have to go into an office. They're a lot younger. That's the change that they see. So I think accepting that things might not go back to normal, almost if you have to grieve them, some people have to grieve the loss. I think the quicker you can accept that, then the quicker you can work on it. And maybe there will be some negative emotions popping up and just understanding, okay, what is it that's bothering you? Are you getting anxious now doing these online things? Are you feeling stressed, worried? Are you getting angry because you feel like you can't communicate? Understanding those key emotions that are getting in the way and where do they come from? And then building a resilience playbook to understand what you can do with that. Because everybody's different. And that's why I'm always careful as to what advice you give, because how one person will experience anxiety be very different to how someone else will. So I think looking inwards and going, have I accepted that this change is here to stay? And if the answer is no, then maybe do some journaling, maybe just reflect on it, maybe just grieve it like a loss and that life isn't what it was. It doesn't mean that this next phase can't be as good or if not much better.
That acceptance plays in very strongly with the kind of rise of or the return of stoicism. Certainly at the leadership level. I think anyone that follows the Tim Ferriss show will not be unaware of the fact that Stoicism, maybe much maligned over 3,000 years, has made quite a distinct return with the sort of Ryan Holiday series of books, you know, The Obstacle is the Way and The Stillness is the Key. One of the key tenets I've picked up from Jonas Salzgeber's little book of Stoicism, which I think is a fantastic read, is this whole concept of the happiness triangle and how that plays into something like Stephen Covey's Circles of Control. You mentioned about acceptance and in Covey's model, that will be the sort of most distant thing away from you, that area that you can't influence directly and therefore have to have a degree of acceptance about, you know, it's beyond your sphere of control. And, you know, that's one of the tenets on the happiness triangle in the Stoic world, is that you can only really focus your efforts around the things that you can control. You can take responsibility for your efforts in the areas that you devote your time and your efforts to, and you can do your best at becoming, you know, living your best life, becoming the best version of yourself in order to achieve that sort of happiness, zen, flow state, call it what you will. But yeah, I think there is a gradual acceptance at sort of leadership level that we've got to focus on our strengths and the areas that we can make an immediate impact on, but stop sweating the small stuff over things that are well beyond our control. And COVID's been almost like a contextualizer for that, that, you know, here we are, enforced lockdowns, massive enforced impact on global stock exchanges, albeit, you know, they've recovered now to the tune of pre-pandemic levels and more, and on, you know, lifestyles, and so much was curtailed that we had no say in whatsoever in many states around the world. And so we've kind of had to come to terms with accepting the reduced envelope in which we've been able to work, but focusing our efforts as leaders on what we can do to improve the robustness of our own organizations, the resilience of our teams, those things that perhaps would have been left unchecked or unexamined had we not had the opportunity to look inwards.
Yeah, and I go pretty quickly towards memento mori, which is, remember, we'll all be dead soon. What you're worrying about right now, it's going to be irrelevant. Or memento mori directly translates to remember you will die. It just gives you that new perspective on things where you're like, well, okay, so my stock portfolio is down 12%, but I'm not going to care about this in a year's time. I'm not going to care about this in 3 months' time. It's not the end of the world. So I tend to go for quite the hard hitting, but I'm naturally quite an existential thinker. Okay.
But that's quite a hard baseline for an existential thinker.
Yeah, so I think that's on the Stoic side of things, just accepting that we can work on what we can work on, thinking about our mortality, taking responsibility for our bit and our part. Amor fati is another one, the love of fate, not merely to bear it, but to love it. So, for example, if we look at my year last year, what is the opportunity for me to learn from all of this, and how is this going to make me more resilient? How is this going to help me rebuild and grow? And yeah, it was painful. All of it was painful at the time, but you kind of just go, well, I'm not dead. It's okay. Like, we don't really need that much. All we need is food, shelter, warmth, bit of a mission. That's quite important. Understanding, okay, what is it? And in those moments of ambiguity, it's what are the tools and techniques and the people that you can lean on around you to help you refine that vision.
But at the self-actualization level, which leaders often exist in, that defined purpose to their efforts, as in not just intentionality and you know, presence in the moment, but what is the overarching impact that I'm looking to have here? I think those tie in very well with Stoicism as well, that, you know, you look to control the things that you can and be the best version of yourself such that you can raise up your purpose to a point where you are delivering something beneficial for the wider society or humanity. So yeah, it's interesting how it's all playing in these days, and I'm sure we'll return to that theme on a number of occasions in future episodes of this podcast, because if you have no purpose and you can't communicate that purpose through your own organization, let alone to your client base, makes the job a lot more difficult, take a lot longer to get where you want to be. So on that note, I guess we should probably wrap up this week's episode, unless there's any big lessons that you want to impart to the listeners.
The only thing I would impart is just looking at morning and evening routines. Since I've restructured and rebuilt them all, I essentially almost forgot the power of them. And I spend a lot of time with my clients doing lifestyle design and going, okay, well, if you had a great day, what would that look like? And I spend so long building other people's morning and evening routines, I forgot to actually repolish my own. So I would recommend everyone having another look at that.
Fantastic insight. Thank you, Kieran. And thank you, everybody, for listening to our podcast today. We hope you found the value in today's episode. If you did, please press that subscribe button on your podcast platform of choice so that you receive our future episodes. We look forward to our next edition, in which we'll be discussing the rising trend of ESG investing and what that ultimately means for companies and institutions of various shapes and sizes. And we'll be talking about guilt, both the rational and irrational kind, and how best to deal with it. So if you'd like to join our discussion or recommend a guest for our future episodes, please hit us up on social media. I'm at GPG Hawkins. Kieran's on Instagram at Total Mental Performance. Or you can email either of us at either GH or KLO at ceoptimist.com. Until then, remember to live with intention, make choices based on your own values, and not let the choices of others define you.